You're listening to Code Punk with Bill Ahern and Michael Zuhl, a podcast about the intersection between programming, technology, and the digital lifestyle.
Hey there, Michael. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's been interesting to see how this podcast is starting to evolve. I mean, we still have our episodes where we talk almost purely about programming or purely about certain technology, but much like the Bots and Beer newsletter, which is kind of almost gearing us towards this idea of a digital lifestyle or kind of what's on the cusp for us, what's up and coming. We've had a couple episodes where we've talked about kind of those things that are up and coming. And we also had some episodes where we kind of talked about cyberpunk films or cyberpunk TV shows in general, because one, that's from an era that we grew up, but at the same time, we're starting to see some of those ideas play out in reality, or at least play out in the near future based on the technologies that are evolving. And you and I had talked probably back when the movie came out, we talked about Ex Machina, which is, of course, is that a British film? I think it was
Ex Machina.
Yeah.
I forget the actor's name, but I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of think it was originally a British film, but you know, it got a lot of rave reviews. It was kind of a cult classic in the making, and you know, we had talked about it a little bit briefly, and you brought up, hey, maybe we should revisit that. And so, I mean, I rewatched it over the weekend or over last weekend, and yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff in it. So, you know, we were going to take this episode to kind of deep dive a little bit into it. And you know, so how do you feel about doing that?
Yeah, no, I'm totally behind it.
Excellent. So of course, I mean, there's going to be spoilers in this episode if you haven't seen the film yet.
Which it's really worth it. Turn your podcast player off, go watch the movie, because we're going to dive into the themes. And obviously in order to do that, we have to talk about how the story unfolds.
Yeah, it was in 2014, and I think it's on Netflix. So go ahead and Netflix and chill with the robot. So it starts off kind of interesting in that it's a programmer, Caleb, who's working for a company, and he basically gets and this company is basically Google. I mean, they don't really try to mask it too much. I think they call it Blue Book is the name of it, but basically it's Google. It's a search engine company, and Caleb works at the search engine company, and he wins what's basically a contest in order to go spend a week with the CEO of the company. And you know, it's kind of cool the way it starts off, because there's no sound and it's just him kind of looking at the screen, and there's all these emails. He starts getting these pop-ups about congratulations, and he's kind of overwhelmed with this. And of course he flies out to this magnificent, and I forget where, it looks like it was almost in Iceland. I don't know where
or New Zealand or something. It looks like it's just a very lush island with mountains and, you know, beautiful vistas.
Right. And this guy is totally isolated out there. Nathan, the CEO of the company, and he's kind of an odd dude. I mean, what did you think of these characters? Cause you don't really see that many of them. And Nathan kind of struck me as an odd dude to begin with. And, you know, Caleb seems to be kind of like your typical geek.
Yeah, he is. And I feel like those archetypes were obviously very deliberate. A lot of things are deliberate in this movie. The presentation of the technological genius being, the way that Nathan is portrayed, almost like kind of a bombastic jerk. It's a trope, but you know, it, you know what, honestly though, at first I was annoyed because I was like, you know, because, Caleb, you know, he wins this contest predicated on the idea that he's a great programmer.
Right. Yeah.
And so he goes out there to spend a week with the CEO, and not knowing necessarily what's going to happen, and you meet him. So you have this sort of like inward dorky computer nerd meets the obnoxious computer genius. And I'm like, you know, before I know really what's going to happen in the story, I'm like, oh, give me a break. It's like, you know, all we needed was like the kid with Asperger's to be the next computer genius. Like, oh, I'm a computer whiz because I have Asperger's. You know what I mean? Like these really insufferable tropes, but I stuck with it. And the reason I brought this up when I was talking to him, I said, you know, we should really visit Ex Machina, was because I had just recently finished it. I had seen part of it. I got to a certain length and I was like, oh man, I just wasn't into it. So I didn't, and I had heard it was really great. And it seemed to have those elements of it, but I didn't get far enough into it. So I finished it and I was like, oh, wow, this movie really is great. So I didn't like Nathan at first. I thought they were trying to play up the stereotype of the obnoxious tech CEO.
But he was, and he's also like a raging alcoholic. Clearly a genius, clearly, I don't want to say despicable. What would be a good descriptive word for him?
He was vulgar. He was a vulgarian.
Very much so, and in more ways than one. I mean, we are talking about... So, of course, as this story progresses, we find out that he has built an artificial intelligence inside of a robotic body. He's made it female. He's given it a face. And he wants Caleb to basically see if it can pass and not really pass a Turing test. Cause he mentions, look, we've already passed the Turing test, but he wanted to see if knowing that Caleb seeing the robot in front of him and knowing that it's a robot, knowing that it's artificial intelligence, and knowing that, could he still be fooled or could he still be led to believe that she was in fact human or had human qualities and it wasn't just a program or it wasn't just a game? And one of the things that makes Nathan a bit vulgar is there does come a point where he just happens to mention to Caleb that he built these robots with basically sensors that create, sexual sensations, orgasms, yeah. Everything. So clearly,
yeah, they're fully sexually autonomous. They were able to experience sex and even orgasms.
Right. And of course, we've talked in the past about the unethical nature of sex robots. Because of course, if you have somebody like Ava, who is on the cusp of being believed to be a fully thinking entity, yet it's, the robot is programmed. She's programmed. And then you want to talk about the potentials of sex with that robot, that clearly starts to breach ethical boundaries. So kind of between the raging alcoholism and conversations like that kind of brings into that perspective, that vulgarity, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know how that you want to do the pace. If you want to kind of work through the story, and kind of build to that, the final end of the story. But as I'm watching it, the initial thing is the Caleb, and that's kind of how I'll approach it unless you want to shift gears on it.
No, but, go ahead.
So Caleb is doing the normal thing any sort of like technologist would do, right? He's curious. So he's asking questions, basically interviewing the thing to see what kind of feedback he gets from it, or her, Ava. And, and initially that is not what the CEO wants. He wants to evoke emotion, and that's kind of what he's seeking. And this little nerdy kid is really, it's like, oh well, he's basically just trying to employ what he believes would be like Turing test style questions and interactions. And I thought the turning point Nathan, right, is his name?
Nathan, yeah.
I'm terrible with remembering names of these things. He's like, give me more. Don't just give me analysis. How did you feel? And he's trying to get the kid to kind of engage with it emotionally. And, clearly that's the beginning. It's not because Nathan wants really the kid to approach this from a different angle. He's really trying to psychologically prime him for to open him up to emotional manipulation. That comes later, but I think that's the first phase. The second phase, and I believe that within the story, Nathan did this on purpose. They're having a dinner. And this is like the second day, because every day so basically what happens is Caleb just goes in and he's talking to the Ava for several hours a day, we're led to believe. They don't really give a timeline. And then at the end of the day, he goes and he kind of debriefs with Nathan, the CEO. And I think it's like the second day they're having a night, like it's a, ambient dinner. It's just the two of them, obviously, because nobody there. And Nathan leads Caleb to believe that he's got this servant, this female. She cooks and cleans.
Yeah, Kyoko.
Kyoko. And so they're kind of talking, and Kyoko accidentally spills something. And Nathan freaks out at her and makes a comment about chaos. Oh, man. Do you remember specifically what he said? Because I don't remember the exact quote, but he's talking about like how annoying it is, like, oh, chaos, you can't stand it when you can't control things. And I thought that was interesting.
Well, I also thought it was, you know, you talk about priming him emotionally, but he was also priming him to see Nathan as an adversary and Ava as somebody who needs rescuing, because he clearly, in the way that he treated Kyoko, he treated her in a demeaning fashion. You know, and he treated her poorly and
excessively. It was really brutal.
And so Caleb starts to kind of see him as this domineering, you know, male persona, and starts to wonder about his treatment towards Ava. And so I think that was purposely manipulative, just to kind of steer Caleb in that direction to be more, right, more sympathetic or more empathetic to Ava than to him. But one of the things that I thought was interesting before we continue to move through was when he actually takes Caleb and he explains to him how he built the artificial intelligence, because of course Blue Book is a search engine. And what really started to get me to think that, wow, this movie is really good, is when Nathan explains to him that while all of his other competitors are trying to figure out better ways to serve you advertising, he realized that what search engines provided him was how people think. Because you're typing in basically your needs and your wants. And it's through that information that he actually started to develop the artificial intelligence that ultimately became Ava. And I thought that was fascinating, because we don't really hear much about that, although search engines and of course Google's in the AI game. And so is Microsoft, you know, with Bing. So they have this large amount of data. It's not just about, you know, serving up search results or serving up advertisement, but it actually has the patterns needed to kind of see on a daily basis what a certain person, you know, is thinking about, or how they think, or how they search, or how they interact, which I thought was fascinating, and kind of took this to a different level. It's not just, oh, I created an artificial intelligence. It's here's how, which kind of brought this movie a little closer to reality, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good point. And it's interesting because as he, and human nature plays a lot more into it as the story begins to unfold. And that's really the sort of like the moment that it sort of indicates that, you know, and kind of starts to go into that direction along with Caleb's emotional manipulation. And then I kind of caught something. I wonder if you saw this too. I mean, it wasn't subtle, but he is dancing with the Asian girl, whose name, what is her name again?
Kyoko.
Kyoko. I'll probably forget that again, but
fascinating scene, by the way.
When he's dancing with her?
Yeah, when they start dancing into the disco music.
He's actually a pretty good dancer. I was impressed.
That was a great, it added a little bit of levity to the scene.
It did.
But it also added a little bit of mechanism to it, or made it feel slightly mechanical, which should have been a hint right there, you know?
Yeah. And at this point, this is where we really start to see that, man, this guy drinks a lot. And I was really wondering, if this was like a ploy. Like, I'd wondered if he was actually really drinking and getting inebriated, or if he was like kind of not drinking alcohol and faking him out. I couldn't tell, right? I didn't know where this movie was going to go. And I thought it was going to go a certain way with the ending, and I was way off, which is anytime I think, because again, at this point I'm thinking like, oh, these tropes are just going to do the same thing. Technology's terrible and we're all scared of it. And it took me by surprise because it, you know, it really flipped that. But he said I think he falls on the couch at one point. And Caleb is just sort of admiring Kyoko. And at a certain point, Nathan is saying that she's an outside hire, that he needed to, you know, someone to come in. But we kind of learn that that's not the truth. But then Nathan says they're just discussing the AI and the machines. And he just mentions it's Promethean, man. And I thought, interesting choice of words, right? Because Frankenstein, a modern Prometheus.
Right.
So I thought, okay. I mean, it wasn't too subtle, but I don't know if a lot of people would have caught that, but I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah. And you know, part of the progression obviously is the relationship between Caleb and Ava. And that takes on kind of that typical trope where, you know, she's trying to gain his sympathy. He's conflicted. But she does mention about, you know, of course, the power outages. She's basically triggering power outages in order to talk to Caleb privately, because she felt that Nathan was probably, you know, recording everything and listening to everything. So it allowed them the opportunity to kind of talk off camera or off microphone about Nathan and about what his plans are. So Caleb starts to wonder what his actual plans are after the test. And he has a conversation with Nathan where, of course, Nathan's drinking again, where he talks about, what occurs after the test. And of course, Nathan says, well, you know, there were versions before her, there'll be versions after her, and I'll have to, you know, take her AI brain out and study it, and it'll do give her an upgrade, and it'll, you know, kill the personality. And that's where Caleb kind of grows concerned, because now he's basically, is Ava sentient or not? Does she have her own personality? Is she her own being? Does she have consciousness? And now you're just talking about wiping that out. Is that ethical? So now right. He's completely conflicted. And he's having,
because he's starting to believe, because now we see that he's, whatever the test was that he was supposed to be convinced of, he's clearly developed some sort of affinity.
Right. So you want to take it from here?
Sure. I mean, just that, you know, now he's talking to her and he's developing, and you can kind of see he's a little smitten. And this is when we get into the conversation about, physical contact, and Nathan reveals that they were designed to be a complete human simulacrum.
Right.
So even down to the physiology and the ability to, have sex, enjoy sex, all of that he programmed into it. And which is kind of impressive that this one dude did this all by himself.
Who's airlifting him all of the electronics so that he can do all this?
Yeah, right. And is he doing A/B testing? I mean, how is he getting this done?
Who's giving him his internet service? Like, sign me up.
Right. Yeah, right. So he reveals this to Caleb, and is sort of pressing Caleb. And this is, again, he's putting a lot of pressure. He's constantly drilling Caleb. He's not very nice to Caleb because, and again, the whole time you're getting the impression that he's really trying to expose a raw emotional component of Caleb to make him more vulnerable for this experiment. Because to me, I'm thinking this is all just one, it's all a put on, right? To fool
right.
Caleb. And so, you know, then he sort of suggests to Caleb, you know, if you like her and you want to sleep with her, she's built for that. And Caleb wants to, but he doesn't want to admit it. And so they have this really interesting dialogue that goes. And again, like you said, ethics comes up a lot, and it comes up here, you know, just because maybe he likes her or wants to doesn't mean that she necessarily wants to. And you can see he's still conflicted, right? That's where you really expose that kind of conflict that he has. Like, there's this thing, it's a machine, but, you know, if we're trying to imbue it with real intelligence, at what point do we respect that intelligence?
Right. And I think, was this during the same, it's either this time he gets drunk or the next time he gets drunk, but eventually gets drunk and passes out, and Caleb actually, you know, steals his security access or the key to his room. And
in one of the blackouts, they had pre-planned the whole thing to get her out.
Right. But this is actually before then, right? This is the time before.
Oh yeah.
This is the time before then. He steals the key. He goes into Nathan's room and he opens up the closets, and he starts to see the other robots, and he comes to the realization that Kyoko is in fact also a robot or also an android. And she in fact peels back some of her skin to show him because she wants him to know. And this trips him out so much that he actually starts to wonder if he's the actual test.
That was brilliant.
If the Turing test is supposed to be on him. So he actually cuts himself. And I think he even smashes the mirror, or he smashes the mirror and then he cuts himself with it in order to see if he actually bleeds, which I thought that was a nice little psychological thing there where Nathan has him so twisted that he started to doubt whether or not he was the one that was being tested instead of Ava.
Yeah, that was brilliant. And even as a viewer, I was starting to wonder, I'm like, well, wait, is he, because I hadn't even really thought of that. And then he starts freaking out. I'm like, oh, wow. Because it was really a believable moment, right? Like, now you're just so, I mean, this is, now you're like, you know, into 4 or 5 days into this. And the guy is just so, because it is like an isolation chamber almost. You can't leave, you can leave the house, but there's nowhere to go. You're on an island. So they're basically just in this sort of like darkly lit, like, you know, very modern mansion.
Yeah, it was a great moment. And then of course that leads into the next moment, which Ava cuts the power and Caleb explains to him what his plan's going to be. And he's going to reprogram the security so that when there's a power failure, the doors unlock instead of locking. And then he tries to get, and he explains that to her that he's going to do it, I think, the next night or whatever. And then
But the audience doesn't know that part yet, which is pretty cool.
That's what he explains it to her. He says he's going to do that. And then he tries to go drinking with Nathan. And of course, Nathan decides he's not going to drink.
Right.
And then of course, after they're going back and forth about a couple of things, Nathan basically takes him over and reveals to him that he's been manipulating him the whole time, that Caleb was not, in fact, and he said, you're a pretty good programmer, but really you were selected based on your searches, based on the fact that, you know, you don't have a girlfriend, and basically all of these reasons to try to find somebody who would be highly manipulated by an attractive female robot. That was the real reason why Caleb was selected.
Right. And Caleb asked Nathan, did you design her based on my porn results? Nathan not only selected him because of his queries and he was highly susceptible to manipulation, but even built the robot to look like Caleb's type.
Yeah. Which was a great moment. It brings up Caleb is, it feels like he's utterly defeated. You know, he's slouched. He's kind of lumped over. Nathan is showing him, some of the videos. And then of course he plays for him the video where he's telling Ava that, you know, when I'm going to steal his key and I'm going to change the power and then, you know, or change the security codes. And then when I cut the power out, the doors will unlock. And of course, the best moment of the film is when Nathan, in all of his glory, you know, thinking that he's victorious, says, gee, you know, it's a shame. I really would have wondered, you know, what would have happened. And Caleb just says, let's find out. and so then Caleb reveals to him, you know, I had a feeling you were going to be recording us. So I actually changed the security codes last night when you were drunk rather than the night.
Right.
Which I was like, oh, okay.
Pretty brilliant.
And then of course, Ava gets out.
Now, I think during that conversation that they're having, Nathan raises a really interesting point. After Caleb finds out that he's been manipulated and that Ava is built specifically to be his ideal sort of woman, Nathan proposes to him, do you think she wanted you to help her because she cares about you or because she learned how to emotionally manipulate you to get what she wants?
Right.
And that was a big deal. And that was when I was like, wow. And since we're sort of sympathizing with Caleb at this point, Caleb still wants to believe that they have something.
Right.
He's fully engaged in that relationship that they have. And she's really playing it up really well. And they didn't throw any just in terms of the story, like they didn't give her any opportunity to do any sort of like sideways glances when Caleb's not looking, nothing to sort of clue the audience in that she may actually be manipulating. So we still have every reason to believe, as Caleb does, that she's true to her word, that she's just learning how to deal with her emotions, and she's an innocent, sort of vulnerable kind of entity. And so Caleb goes to help her anyway, right? My brain is scrambling on exactly what happens here.
Nathan punches him in the face and knocks him out.
That's what it is.
And then he goes to try to prevent her from escaping. And, he takes one of the barbells from the hand weights. And I think he ends up breaking her arm. But then Kyoko comes up from behind him and stabs him. So he turns around and hits her in the jaw with the barbell, and then Ava pulls the knife out. He turns around and she shoves it in and essentially kills him. And this is where I think there's some room for debate. And I don't know what the answer is to this. So I think they left it open-ended purposely, because of course, Caleb wakes up. She puts full skin on based on the skin that was there with the other androids. And then she leaves and locks him in the facility. Right?
Right. Right.
Now, some people interpret that as she left him there to die. But the more I think about it, I'm not so sure. Because she makes a comment to him before she goes and gets dressed in the new skin. As he's waking up, she's waiting for him. She didn't kill him there. She didn't, stab him also. She waits for him to wake up. And when he wakes up, she says, will you wait here? And then she goes and gets the skin on. And then she leaves the facility without coming back towards him. And so I kind of wonder, and of course, she's smart enough to know that he can reprogram the security systems. So as she leaves, she, you know, creates a power outage so that he can't reprogram the security system to get himself out. You know, that way she can make it to the helicopter. But you are, right. you are talking about, now from an optimistic perspective, you are talking about a very large facility. Clearly Nathan has been there for weeks, if not months on end. So clearly he's stocked with food, with water, with alcohol, all the necessities that you would need to actually survive. So Caleb certainly isn't going to die the next day. So he would have had to have been locked up in there, maybe even for a year, before finally running out of all of the things that he would need to survive. And I kind of wonder if she left him there on purpose because she needs somebody to come back to in case there's a problem or she needs an upgrade or whatever. You know what I mean?
Could be. That I'll say that that wasn't my take. I think because we can get into the ethics of it, you know, since now we're at the end of the movie. If I recall correctly, Caleb was actually locked in Nathan's bedroom with no, and remember all, so Nathan explains to Caleb in the beginning of the movie, all of the rooms are key carded. So some rooms Caleb had access to, some didn't. He didn't. So when she shuts, when the locks switch, it locked Caleb in Nathan's bedroom. And there was no other access to the rest of the house. So he's just in that room, period.
Yeah, I have to go back and look at it. I don't know if that was his bedroom because I thought his bedroom was the room where all of the skin was, and or for the robots. So that was actually the room next to his. So he was wherever the weightlifting was, along with a couple of computers. So it was like the side room that was next to the bedroom. So maybe he was in like the master bedroom or whatever, and there's multiple rooms.
Yeah.
But that would then make us have to be under the assumption that there's only one way into the room. I just don't know what the layout of the house is.
Yeah. So basically my assumption was that he was in this one room with no access to the rest of the facilities, which means, you know, no food. Basically he was left to die there. And she leaves, she gets on the helicopter that was meant to take him away because now it's the end of the week. And then she just goes and basically the movie ends with her just walking around the corporate building, just kind of looking around. There's really not much there. But I thought the end really encapsulated a really great point that we make on the show often when we talk about artificial intelligence, technology, and ethics, which is data is not unbiased inherently. And so if you have this guy, Nathan, who is this manipulator – and he's mean, or at least mean-spirited, she's not going to learn anything from him contrary to that. She's going to learn to be manipulative. She's going to learn to be cold-hearted, cruel, and calculating, which is exactly what is demonstrated at the end. My sense is she locked him in there and maybe even asked him if he was willing to wait just to kind of keep him in there. She just wanted to guarantee he'd stay there. So when he got locked in, he was in. And she just wanted to like erase the whole thing and leave any trace of what had happened behind. She really was this cruel, calculating manipulator because that was who her creator was. You know, that was the data set that was her data sample, you know, to model from. And so she doesn't know any different.
I mean, I can see that. And that was my initial interpretation of it when watching the film the first time, was that she just left him there to die. But on second viewing and kind of looking at how their relationship progressed, I mean, she obviously would have learned things from him as well. And in addition to being a manipulative, but there was, she could have just killed him. There was no reason for her not to. She certainly wasn't going to be implicated in anything. So I kind of wonder why, you know, she waits for him to wake up and she just says, you know, will you wait here? Making it sound like he has a choice.
Right.
And then she goes and gets dressed and then walks right by him and then leaves and you know, locks the doors and causes the power outage. There seemed to be some greater sense of I don't know whether she couldn't bring herself to kill him. So now she's keeping him as a pet. I have no clue.
But it makes me want to, I'm going to go back and watch it now with that kind of that context.
Yeah. See what you think on the ending, but I could see it both ways. I mean, clearly it was meant to be slightly ambiguous and obviously, give you a little bit of dread in the sense that this AI is now out there in the world. And like I said, first interpretation is she left him there, you know, to die. But as I go back into it, I'm saying, oh, okay, well, sure, she could have left him there to die, but if we want to overthink the ending and we want to overthink her needs beyond freedom, there would be a reason for keeping Caleb alive, for, you know, any number of reasons. So I really don't know. I enjoyed it though. I certainly wouldn't want to see a sequel because it would just ruin it. I like that they left it open-ended. I like that they have all the ambiguity in their you know, her, reasons for doing things and whether or not she did like Caleb or was manipulative to him. It just left a lot of nice things hanging and a lot of ethical questions and a lot to think about. I thought it was really, really well put together movie.
It was. It was not how I expected it to end. And I, you know, I immediately, and again, kind of going in line with my, initial, interpretation of that ending, you know, I immediately thought of, or at least, you know, shortly thereafter thought of Microsoft's Tay. Tay was a bot Microsoft had created and put it on Twitter and allowed Tay to learn from all of its interactions on Twitter. Well, people, being people on Twitter, had to be obnoxious and say stupid things. And eventually Tay started, again, because this is just its learning sample, it started saying racist, anti-Semitic things. And so Microsoft shut it down. Interesting experiment. But again, a thing can only become what its environment allows it to be. And so if this guy works in isolation, and we make jokes about how could he do it alone and, you know, where's he getting the resources. But the point there obviously is that these things are learning only from a single source of truth, which is this one guy, and clearly his personality left a lot to be desired. And now I see the drinking is just, we're exploring this guy's flaws. You know, it turns out the drinking wasn't a sort of distraction or misdirection. Literally, he just drank too much. And then, of course, since he was actually watching what they were doing when the power went out and not letting on to it, he knew that they were planning on getting him drunk. So, of course, he had a reason to not drink that day. But, you know, yeah. So if you have a creator, a Victor Frankenstein, if you will, who creates a monster, you know, and Frankenstein was obviously a narcissist. And so Frankenstein kind of came from that. There was no way for Frankenstein. Frankenstein was doomed because his creator was doomed. And that's sort of the same story here. That's, I think, what was the reference was that, you know, a flawed creature creating other creatures has no hope to make something perfect.
And Frankenstein's monster, you know, the creature in the story, wasn't inherently evil.
It wasn't. It was tragically flawed, though, right?
Right. So, which is why I don't. Which is another reason why I don't quite see Ava as explicitly wanting to kill Caleb.
That's a good point.
Maybe,
yeah,
maybe,
a very good point.
Maybe accidentally, if she doesn't turn the power back on, certainly. But I think it leaves, if we're drawing a straight comparison to, you know, to Prometheus and to Frankenstein, which of course is a modern Prometheus, and we look at this as an even more modern version of that story, you certainly have the flaws between the two of them, and you certainly are going to have collateral damage. It's not as cut and dry as good versus evil. And I think that that's what kind of makes it a really great film is there's a lot of questions throughout the film. There's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of, you know, ethical conundrums. And I think the ending should share some of that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I like that it's open-ended because those are the kinds of things that get the conversations going.
Absolutely. Do you got any wrap up or final words for this?
No, that's all. I would just recommend anybody who hasn't seen it, go see it. And of course, if you have seen it, maybe go back and watch it with some of the different context we gave you guys.
Yeah. And if you guys have any other movies you think we should talk about on this podcast, again, we kind of gear towards that just on the cusp of modern time. So like the near future or cyberpunk, you know, let us know on Twitter and we'll try to throw something together. I mean, you mentioned something not that long ago. Did you call it hardcore? What was it? There was a cyberpunk film you tweeted at me.
Hardware.
Yeah. So
Hardware's a classic.
I'll have to watch that. Maybe we'll deep dive into that a little bit. All right. Well, until next time, see you guys later.
Take care, everybody.
That's it for this episode of Code Punk. You can subscribe to this podcast on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher, or listen to it on the web at codepunk.io. You can find Bill on Twitter at Nora Thustra and Michael on Twitter at Zool.